Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, you probably know the bad news. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There is a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. I have been using Monarch Money for over a year now, and it makes my weekly money dates so much easier and a lot less stressful. I tried all of the other personal finance apps, but they just didn't work for me. I love Monarch because I can see exactly where my money is going and track my goals all at the same time. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, your investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Monarch has a tool that also lets you easily import your data from Mint so you can keep all of your tags and categories. And unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, very intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. And one of the features I love most is Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, your family, or your financial advisor. You can invite them to your account at no extra cost. They get their own login, and you can have a joint view of your finances. Monarch is also the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up automatic rules for transactions. You can go to town with Monarch. Plus, they have ad-free privacy you can trust. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of the show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Hey, I'm Shauna Comptegame. This is Millennial Money. And today we're talking about the number one most important piece of money advice ever. So you're going to want to make sure that you stay tuned and check out this awesome interview that I have with my good friend, Chris Costello, who is CEO and co-founder of Bloom. You guys remember Bloom? They're there. They help you fix your 401k. And today we're talking about that most important piece of financial money advice that you're ever going to need to know. Chris has got some cool other money tips to help you save a ton of money. And then we're going to talk about the question that keeps coming up. You know, what do you do? Do you pay off your student loan debt first, or do you start saving? Do you put money in a 401k? Do you put money in an IRA? What in the world should you do first? And Chris has got some awesome advice for that. So stay tuned, check out the interview, and I hope you guys get a lot of great information from this one, because it's a good one. All right, Chris, I'm so excited to have you back on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. I really enjoy being a part of this with you.
Fantastic. Well, I know the last time we talked, there was kind of an overwhelming response to our conversation. So I thought, you know, it'd be awesome to just follow it up. And I'm getting just a ton of questions, you know, from millennials about investing. And there's so many different things I think that, you know, being in your 20s or early 30s that, you know, they're trying to figure out this whole, you know, debt debacle versus investing and saving money. And it's just almost, I think, like so overwhelming for millennials right now that they don't know which direction to go into. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit. I know you just recently wrote an article about, you know, should you be focused on paying off student loans or should you be focused on saving? Like where, how do you fall into that? What do you kind of advise people?
Yeah. And it's, I'm glad you're, that we get a chance to talk about this, that you're asking about this, because this is clearly a major issue. It's a major problem for our country right now in a variety of different avenues. I've spoke publicly about this before, that some of the ancillary, unintended consequences, if you will, of these basically record levels of student loan debt are affecting areas that maybe you wouldn't at first glance think about. And that is the number of, students coming out of college and starting businesses is declining. And it's for obvious reasons. If you're saddled with debt, it makes it very hard for you to bootstrap your own entrepreneurial venture. Secondly, you see professions like teachers and social workers and maybe nurses or firefighters, some of the really, some of the professions that we absolutely need people to go into, we're seeing those numbers decline too. Because again, if you're saddled with a lot of student loan debt and you're looking at a job that's going to pay you 30 grand or a job that's going to pay you 50, you might be more inclined to take that higher paying job, even though your heart's really set on being a teacher or being a social worker. And so it's unfortunate, some of those things that are happening right now. And it's definitely affecting the millennial generation more so in the past, largely, no big surprise, because of the cost of college. There used to be a time when you could work a summer job, maybe work a part-time job during the school year, and you could graduate in 4 years with no debt. Well, that's almost impossible today with where tuition, room, board are. So to get to the crux of your question, which is a question we get a ton at Bloom, obviously because we're dealing on a daily basis with thousands and thousands of our clients' 401k accounts, is we get the question from a young person, and they'll say, "I've got student loan debt, but I have access to a 401k. Should I be contributing to the 401k? And the advice here is really pretty simple. If you are still paying on student loan debt, or heck, for that matter, if you've got other what I call bad debt, which could be credit card debt, it could be maybe money that you're paying. You bought a car and you're trying to pay that off. So let's call it a car, credit cards, or student loans. If you have any of that debt, you should only be contributing enough into your 401k that you get the maximum match from your employer. So oftentimes, an employer will match 50 cents on the dollar for the first 6% that you put into your 401k, which means if you put 6% of your salary into your 401k, you're going to get 3% free, given to you by your employer. Now, not all employers match, and sometimes those percentages look a little bit different. So find out if your employer will make a match and find out what you need to contribute to get the most match from your employer. But do not put a penny more into your 401k on top of that, because all of those extra dollars, everything that you can stomach, everything that you can endure, should be going towards paying off your student loans, your credit cards, or your car loans as fast as humanly possible. The goal is to get rid of this stupid debt once and for all. The sad thing is we see people carrying, I've met people that are in their 50s that are still paying on student loan debt. And if you think about it, they probably had a lot less debt than a lot of the folks today coming out of college have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm hearing, crazy numbers of student loan debt that even from schools where you wouldn't think it would be that high.
I know. Yeah.
I think there's so much information flying at millennials, now there's, do you consolidate your student loan? Do you, use this other loan to pay off your student loan? Do you, there's all of this kind of confusion out there. And I think that when you throw on top of that, investing, which is another, can be confusing topic for millennials, it's almost just, information overload.
Yeah, you mentioned this. You brought this up, so I want to make a comment about this. You talked about the confusion, with do I consolidate my loans and things of that nature. You know, there's a number of companies that have popped up recently that can help folks consolidate the loans. And I'm not saying those aren't good services. Sometimes they can lower your interest rate. But at the end of the day, that is not going to make a difference whether or not you get out of your debt, if your student loans are consolidated or not. The name of the game here is to go into this with such a hell-bent attitude that you stand the thought of owing money on student loans, and you are going to do everything in your power to pay those things off as fast as humanly possible. Consolidating is just kind of delaying the inevitable. It's kind of just playing around at the margin. You know, maybe you're improving your interest rate. Maybe you're making it simpler because instead of having to pay on four different loans, you're only paying on one. But at the end of the day, what will really change someone's life is if they make the decision that I hate this debt and I am going to put as much of my disposable income towards paying these off as I possibly can. If that means that I'm going to keep renting an apartment for a while, if that means I'm going to keep driving this old car with 100,000 miles on it, if it means that I'm not going to buy the latest and greatest iPhone every 6 months that it comes out, because what I try and talk to people about is do these things now. Live like this now. You know, sacrifice and scrimp a little bit now so that in 10 years down the road, maybe, which is a short time period in the grand scheme of life, you can have that totally behind you. And then you can start to enjoy, you know, that the cars and some of the new material things that I think some of us think we need to have.
Right, exactly. Life does not happen biweekly, so why should your payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin, it's an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Listen, the money you get from Earnin, it could do a lot of things. Maybe you spend it on a gift for someone special in your life, or in my case, an unexpected and very expensive trip to the vet for my pup Winnie, or maybe you use the money towards your upcoming rent payment. There are lots of ways the Earnin money could go to use. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability, security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin, T-A-L-K-I-N, money, under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin, money, under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/ETM. Yeah, that's so awesome. And, you know, that sort of rolls into another question. You wrote an article about what you call the single most important piece of financial advice. And I think it was something interesting in there. You said that you did a Google search for financial advice articles, and there was something like 65 million different things that came up. So, I mean, obviously, this is a huge topic, you know, that people are kind of inquiring about. And yet there is so much information out there. But, you know, what you say is the single most important piece of financial advice, and what I say are the exact same things. And I think this really speaks to your point about, you know, delaying some of those, you know, those toys, those luxuries, those things that we feel like we have to have right now, you know, for the future. And that is really just so very simply to spend less than you earn, which, you know, for you and I who are certified financial planners, that's, you know, we say that probably on a daily basis to people. But I think millennials, especially with social media and like everything is just in their face, it's almost, you know, so difficult for them to do that. And I was wondering if you just could, you know, offer any tips that maybe you shared in your article and talk about, you know, why that's so important.
Well, yeah. So there's two reasons why I feel like I can speak confidently about that type of advice. Number one, I don't hesitate to share this. Like I lived this myself. I was the person making some of these poor financial decisions early in my life. I'll tell you that when I walked down the hill at my college graduation, I was carrying about $30,000 of student loan and credit card debt. When I got married a couple years later, my wife had about $10,000 of student loan debt. So very early on, we were, you know, $40,000 in debt. And I made some of those just absolutely stupid decisions right out of school. The only time in my life I've had a brand new car was when I graduated from college. Now, how much sense does that make? You know, I mean, obviously I make, you know, a lot more income now than I did when I graduated from college, but yet I had a brand new car back then. So I only share that because I want to, you know, I want your listeners to know that I've actually experienced what a lot of them are experiencing. And if somebody can learn and benefit from some of the poor decisions that I've made in the past, that would make me, I may never know it, but it'd make me very happy. But more to your question. So before, you know, Bloom, we spend our time at Bloom now, obviously helping people fix their 401k accounts. And we chose that because there's 90 million people today that have a 401k. I think if we could somehow instantaneously do a sample poll of all 90 million people, I think we'd probably find that somewhere over 80 million of those people would say, I don't know what I'm doing with my 401k. But before Bloom, before my time at Bloom, I spent about 18 years working with high net worth individuals. So these were people, you know, before Bloom that I was helping as a certified financial planner, most of which were making the transition from work life into retirement. And, you know, we retired folks, you know, from 50 all the way into their mid 60s. And the absolute common thread that was woven through almost every single one of these wealthy clients was that they spent less than they made. And one of the things I can promise you is that the type of client we worked with was not a high income earner. 90%+ of them never made a ton of money. Okay, they did not inherit it, and they were not whiz bangs of the stock market. It's not like they were making millions of dollars by trading. These were everyday middle class people that weren't necessarily high income earners that just figured out whatever they were going to make, they were going to spend less than that. And as it turns out, they got to retirement and they had amassed generally more than $1 million that they could then use that to live off of for the rest of their life. And, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do at Bloom is kind of change the conversation a little bit. I think sometimes when you say the word retirement to people that are, you know, in their 20s and even 30s, it seems like it's such a far off, kind of intangible, abstract concept. And we tend to talk more about, so forget retirement in the traditional sense. I think everybody wants to be in a position at some point in their life where they can wake up in the morning and decide what they're going to do that day, that they get to choose that. If they want to go volunteer their time, if they want to start their own business, if they want to travel, if they want to go see friends and family, if they want to climb a mountain, whatever those goals might be, is I think that speaks to more people than if you say just purely retirement. Because sometimes when you say retirement, you still tend to think about, well, I'm not going to ever just retire to the front porch on a rocking chair, you know?
Right. Or that's what my parents do. That's not, yeah.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
For old people. Yeah.
That's not me, exactly. Yeah, that is you can mess up a lot of things in your life as far as, you know, picking the best investments, which is obviously impossible to do anyway, but just by living below your means can make up for so many bad, you know, things elsewhere. And it is a very easy thing to say, but hard concept to follow. And part of it is because, my gosh, these companies these days are so good at advertising. They're so good at convincing us that we need the latest and greatest iPhone. We need a new car. We need that $6,000 vacation. All these things that these advertisers are so good at making us believe that we need, you know, is what's standing in the way. Do they think most people, when you ask them, you know, does it make sense to live below your means? I think everybody knows that intuitively. It's just really, really hard to do.
Yeah, and I spend a lot of time, you know, teaching and preaching about what I call know your numbers, which I think, you know, I mean, I've obviously seen people, you know, way farther along in life who are, you know, making millions of dollars and they're still living paycheck to paycheck. But I think, you know, for millennials, for young people, you know, if you're in your 20s or your early 30s, you know, really having a grasp on the amount of money you actually need each month to just live, to just, you know, pay for the things that are the bare necessities in life. You know, what is that kind of bottom number? You know, and then once you know that, then you have a really good grasp of what's happening in your finances. But I think, you know, most people, it's just money in, money out, money in, money out. And there's not even a conscious awareness of like, oh, wow, I actually could save an extra $200 or $300 or $100 a month, you know, just by knowing what's going on. And then I can take that money and put it into my 401k or put it into my paying off my debt. And even just a small chunk every month can make a dramatic difference, you know, 10, 20 years down the line.
Well, it definitely can. And I'll give you another suggestion or piece of advice that I think can be very powerful if people will follow this too. So at some point, likely most or if not all of your listeners will likely want to buy a house at some point when the time is right. If people will pick a 15-year mortgage over a 30-year mortgage, that one single decision can have massive positive repercussions over one's lifetime, and I'll explain what I mean. So you know, when you go to buy a house, you can choose to either finance that or stretch those payments over 30 years, which means your payments are going to be smaller but paid over a longer period of time, or you can condense those payments over 15 years. Now, as you and I both know, a 15-year mortgage is going to have a much better interest rate, you know, cost of borrowing than a 30-year rate is. Now, so in order to afford, let's say you wanted to buy a $300,000 house, okay? If you finance it over 30 years, your payment's going to be, you know, something less than if you finance that over 15 years. But if you can somehow talk yourself into getting a 15-year mortgage, even if it means buying a smaller house, so maybe you don't buy a $300,000 house, you buy a $250,000 house, but then you're able to afford that payment and put that into a 15-year mortgage. If you can have a house that is paid for by the time you are 50, you are absolutely in the very, very minority of this entire country. I don't know the stats, but I would guess that we're talking about less than 1% of all Americans have their house paid for by the age of 50. That one single decision, again, I say this, you can screw up a lot of other things, but if you've got a house that's paid for by the time you are 50, talk about being in control of your destiny. Talk about being able to maybe put kids through college easier. If you're not making a mortgage payment, well, there's a couple thousand bucks a month that's freed up right there that could go to paying for a kid's college, or say really ratcheting up your savings for retirement. But again, that kind of falls into that category of living below your means, because you look at, you say, I want to have this $300,000 house. We can only afford a payment of such. If we want to keep that same payment, it means we can only afford a $250,000 house. Again, intuitively, that makes sense. It's hard to execute. But the few people in this country that are willing to do that, those are the ones that showed up at my door, at my last career, at my last job, with north of $1 million and wanting to retire, be done, financially independent in their 50s.
Yeah, that is just such an awesome, awesome tip.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
So we have just a few minutes more, and I want to kind of roll into this because I'm sure at Bloom, you guys get this, asked this a lot, especially for, you know, your younger clients. You know, millennials, they saw what happened in 2008. Mm-hmm. They do not want to be a part of any of that again. Mm-hmm. And so inherently, they've become ultra conservative. Mm-hmm. And it, as far as investing, either they're so conservative that they don't want to, you know, put their money in anything even remotely risky, or they're just not entering the 401k, IRA, you know, retirement savings game altogether. They're just skipping over that. And so I was wondering if, you know, you had any tips, especially, you know, with Bloom, I'm sure you get this question asked a lot, you know, how can somebody in their 20s who's maybe, you know, really nervous about what's happening in the stock market, what's going to go forward, how can they feel comfortable, you know, starting to invest?
Yeah, that's a very, very real issue. The positive side of that is I do think that a lot of millennials are better savers, in a sense that I think they've got decent you know, rat hole accounts, if you will, in the bank account, and that can be good, because, you know, people that are still working need to have a little bit of a safety net that's not invested for the future. You know, kind of that, and I'm sure you talk about this too, this certain amount of savings that's kind of tucked away safely in the event of a job loss, yep. You know, that you can fall back on. So I do think that there's a silver lining to this cloud, and that is, I think millennials want to be decent savers. Now, whether or not they're putting that savings into the right area is, I think, maybe where the point of your question is. But let's first of all understand why, and you talked about this, why they feel that way. I mean, if somebody is 30 years old, that means they were born in, let's say, 1986. So the first, really, you know, the dot-com crash of 2000, 2001, 2002, you know, so that person was 15, you know, maybe 16 years at the time, old enough to probably comprehend to some degree, or maybe they heard their parents talking about, you know, the stock market when it tanked in 2000, 2001. Obviously, they remember 9/11, you know, as a part of that. And then, yes, and then more recently, you know, fast forward to 2008 and 2009. And obviously, at that time, that same 30-year-old would have been probably just coming out of college. And so very, very, you know, plugged in to, you know, hearing from the news what was happening. I think that – I don't know that there's necessarily anything right off the bat that will change their mindset. I think some of this is just going to be a healing process, and will take time to before these younger people see that you still can build wealth by investing in the market. Bloom thinks that we have figured out a way to do that, and it starts and ends with simplicity. I think that when people don't understand something, it's easy to be intimidated by it. And so when when Wall Street continues to put out the jargon and the language and the complicated investment terminology, I think that makes it very easy for younger people just to stay put where they're at and leave those balances in the bank account. But the companies that can kind of break through that jargon and speak to people like human beings, with simple terms, with friendly terms, I think that those will be the companies that will start to gain market share. The timing is perfect right now. I mean, we are ready for some innovation and some change to the status quo. Bloom happens to be based in Kansas, and I actually think that's the perfect spot for financial innovation to come out of, because I do think a lot of people don't trust Wall Street, as they did maybe 30 years ago. And of course, there's a lot of innovation coming out of Silicon Valley, but sometimes I think there's an association with just creating something to sell, build up a quick company just to sell it for millions of dollars, versus I think more of the Midwest, at least I'm biased, obviously I'm from here, but that, to me, that kind of just reeks of kind of long-term values and building enduring companies. I mean, we're right here outside of Kansas City, and there's some wonderful companies that were built by entrepreneurs years and years ago that are still, here in Kansas City and flourishing, and their household names and brands. And that's what we want to try and build Bloom into, is that company that is reaching a brand new generation of people and reaching a group of people that have really been overlooked by Wall Street and haven't been helped to the same extent as maybe some of the wealthy clients. And fortunately, technology allows us to do that. Because of technology and innovation, we're able to bring a service to a group of people that really never had access to that service before. And it's been a lot of fun and very rewarding.
Awesome. Well, as always, the time has just absolutely flown by. I love all of your tips. I know all of our listeners really do. And Chris, I just thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us, sharing what's going on with Bloom. And can't wait to have you back as a guest again.
Well, thank you. I apologize. I can be long-winded. So thanks for putting up with me today.
No problem.